It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. When was the last time you gave up on something? Or gave something up? Maybe something big, like a job. Or small, like dinner.
Can you tell me about the first time that you had fasted and what that experience was like?
So I was a young man. It was a lifetime ago. I'm a New York City Jew, and I grew up with the concept of Yom Kippur. And among Jews, you're not supposed to eat from sunup to sundown, and you think about your sins over the past year. It's a big deal, and that's just one day.
Producer Angelo Bautista tracked down John Oakes, author of The Fast, The History, Science, Philosophy, and Promise of Doing Without.
It would have been the early 1990s. My partner then and now, she was going on a fast, and I decided to go along with her, and it was going to be a week, and I thought, no way, you know, am I going to be able to live? You know, what's going to happen to me? Am I going to collapse? This is something I couldn't achieve or reach. If you're drinking adequately, you just feel a little discomfort for the first 48 to 72 hours. It gets boring after a while. It wasn't so much that I was hungry, but I really missed the taste, the flavor of foods. Mm. Wouldn't a slice of bread be nice, or an apple, or whatever one eats? You might even feel a bit of physical discomfort. Really, your body's so interesting. These hormones kicking in and this enteric nervous system saying to your brain, what the hell is going on? You're not managing things the way you're supposed to. Go out and track down an antelope and kill it and eat it now. But if you can resist that, if you get past that point, you reach a certain plateau and your body releases a whole bunch of hormones and stuff that are really cool. It became a very contemplative thing.
Cool.
You know, I'd be found staring off into, you get a little stoned. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if you can say that. You stare off into the distance, but that's not a bad thing to do once in a while. I'm going on way too long. You guys have lives to get back to. No. But it's not incidental that fasting is so entwined with religions. I like the stepping back, stepping off these runways you see in airports, the treadmills, stepping off the treadmill and then getting back on. I'm sure I complain constantly, but it's certainly easier to do with a partner, but it takes a commitment.
What was different about fasting the second time around?
Sure, Angelo. So I didn't feel the need to do it again. I really didn't think about it again very much until recently. In the aftermath of the Trump administration, I really just felt this overriding need to purge myself and just get that out of my system. I wanted to get to a different state of thinking about things. And I just spontaneously decided to go on another long fast. And I did it, and it was an interesting experience. After two or three days, your body reaches a kind of a plane. This time it wasn't so much a matter of, oh my God, you know, am I gonna be able to live? And I was just more observant and not focusing so much on how I was feeling. It was much more a meditative experience because I knew that I could go through it and come out perfectly healthy. And then I got interested in the history and the process and what it does to your body.
Fasting is an ancient technology that's experiencing something of a revival right now. In health and fitness circles, intermittent fasting and calorie deprivation are hot topics. But when John Oakes set out to explore the concept, he took it a lot deeper. Producer Angela Bautista wanted to know more about doing with less.
You reiterate in the book that fasting is more than just about food. So what is it about? You mentioned the process.
In our daily lives, we go through this thing called automaticity. In order to function, when you wake up, you get dressed and you don't think about maybe the process of tying your shoes or putting on your clothes or brushing your teeth, pouring yourself a cup of coffee. And a lot of that, we just slip into unthinkingly. What interested me was this idea of holding back and creation, how when you step back, you allow something new to happen, maybe something you hadn't anticipated. And to me, that's a really interesting, exciting idea.
What I hear in you talking about this is that fasting is about asserting agency and affirming boundaries between yourself and the rest of the world.
Absolutely, completely. And even if the effect is evanescent, even if it goes away because I slip back into my old habits, which is fine. I mean, you don't want to become a perennial faster, somebody obsessed with this idea of, I think that is a danger that one has to be aware of if you undertake the fast. It's a mental, I guess, disorder that is sometimes called anorexia or fasting without end, fasting that's impossible to achieve. A fast, if you're going to undertake it, should be something that's of a limited duration that has very strong boundaries. And during that time, you're thinking about other things. But you're right, it is a reconsideration of boundaries. It also helps you reflect on your own physical boundaries, the bodies in which we're all encased.
I'm curious as to what actually happens to the body when we fast. We've had this long history of fasting. Do we have an understanding about what happens?
Well, I'm obviously not a medical professional, but I spoke to a few, and it's really interesting. Everyone's body, of course, is different. And so everyone's going to react to a fast in different ways. The first few days of a fast, if you're on a liquid-only fast, are generally quite uncomfortable. But then your body starts, this incredible machinery kicks in, and these chemicals come out, this sort of cocktail of chemicals starts happening. You have these things called ketone bodies and these endocannabinoids, which, as it sounds, you know, they're closely related to cannabis. You have serotonin, which is sometimes called the happy hormone. You have BHB, which is another hormone. All this stuff kicks in. Many people start feeling serene and calm, which I did and do when I fast for a long time. Some people, like Cesar Chavez, the great labor leader, who was a real serious faster, he said that about the fifth day of a fast, he would have this crystal clear memory and he could recall conversations word for word. That never happened to me. But, you know, that people do feel different things, but your body really does go through very interesting changes.
Interesting.
What I would say is that it's not a cure-all, as a lot of people said, oh, cure everything from the common cold to cancer. And it's just not that clear what it does for you.
But we are learning more about the relationship between our gut and our brain.
Yes.
And you wrote something interesting, that our gut is our largest sensory organ in our body. And I'd never considered that before. So what role does our gut play in our conscious experience? And what does fasting do to that?
Well, you know, it's sometimes called our second brain, the enteric nervous system, which is this really incredible mass, hundreds of millions of neurons, second only to the brain, that are sitting right there in our intestines and the stomach. And it matches up, I think, to the number of neurons in a a dog's cerebral cortex. We have sort of a dog's brain in our gut, and that drives us. When you're fasting, you make a decision with your brain, presumably, to go against that, to differentiate yourself from the brain in your gut and going with the brain in your head. And at the beginning, it's a little battle going on, I think, for most people. Certainly for me, you know, the first day or two, it's a little uncomfortable. But for me, it's not really about the pain or the discomfort. It's the opening up and the reconsideration of who I am and how I fit into this world.
I wanted to talk about where the roots of fasting begin. How far back can we trace this practice of fasting?
That's a good question. One early example of fasting is in the Iliad. Achilles, after the death of Patroclus, his partner, he refuses to eat. Then he goes into battle. And for some historians or classicists, that's been evidence of his bloodlust. But for me, he was acknowledging the massive break in his life. And of course, there's in the Bible, there are many instances of fasting. There's Moses and, of course, Jesus with his 40 days. The Greeks, the ascetics, Epicureans, the Stoics, Plato, everybody fasted now and again. And there's a lot of people fasting before battle, seeking to purify themselves.
You mentioned that you were Jewish and you mentioned the Bible, and it's interesting that this comes up in Abrahamic religions and how they are united in this tradition, but they kind of differ as well.
Yes. In Islam, I was interested to learn that Ramadan is really a joyful experience. And if you're a strict Muslim, you fast from sunup to sundown and you don't drink anything. And then in the evening, there's a sort of repairing feast, but it's a time to be together with family and friends. And it's again contemplative, but it doesn't have quite the punitive aspect that I associate with the Judeo-Christian tradition. And in Christianity, traditionally, it's been a way to mortify the flesh. They saw it as a way to transcend the flesh and become nearer to God. That's obviously a test of physical abilities. And you don't really, at least I didn't see that so much in the Islamic tradition. And the people I spoke to, the imams, didn't.
I want to talk about fasting as a form of protest. I was kind of amazed to learn that hunger strikes are still ongoing, that these are still a thing that are happening.
All around the globe, all the time. And it's happened as far back as we can see, I think. And of course, there was the Brown University fasters who just days ago ended their week-long fast in solidarity with what's going on in Palestine. It really was interesting to me how this seems to be something that's, it's not even a learned activity. It seems endemic to being human. This concept of saying, I don't like the way things are. I want to stop and pull back. I can't get you to listen to me. And the one way I can really focus your attention is by saying, I'm putting my life on the line and I'm going to go on a hunger strike. And it also forces the authorities to interact in a way they'd rather not. Authorities everywhere want to be seen as the maintainers of order against chaos and evil doing. And I think a hunger strike is generally seen as a court of last resort.
So what is the through line of fasting as this kind of holy ascetic tradition to now it has become kind of a dieting and wellness fad? Even my parents are participating in intermittent fasting now.
You know, I suppose it's fine if it makes people feel better about themselves, it makes their system function better, that more power to them. You could say what I object to is this idea that you need to go to these spas and spend, people spend like thousands and thousands of dollars. It's just inconceivable to me. You don't really need anything to fast. I mean,
fasting is free.
Fasting is free.
You know, it seems to me that in this culture of excess that we live in, it almost seems like there's a moral imperative to do less and to redirect ourselves. Are you seeing fasting coming into the culture more?
I don't know if there's an imperative to do less, but maybe an imperative to think about what we're consuming and how we do it and why. I think that is a good idea. I don't want to bring it back to evil corporations, but you know, there people want us to buy and to keep buying. And there is this tradition of you're feeling down, so you should buy stuff and consume stuff. And I think there is an increasing absolutely movement among people who are saying we should maybe consider what we need and what we don't need. And I think the number one element in landfill is food waste, which is astounding to me. You know, fasting can be a tool to get us there.
John Oakes is the author of The Fast: The History, Science, Philosophy, and Promise of Doing Without. And that was producer Angelo Bautista talking with him.